This is X-Ane Anderson. Welcome today to the Principal Podcast. Today, I'm thrilled to have James I. Bond. He's the author of Brain Glue. He's uncovered some principles and techniques about persuasion. I'm thrilled to have you on the show. Thanks for coming on the show with us today,
James. X-Ane, thank you for having me. I love your show. And it covers so many areas, but particularly as parents. You know, I have a son and three daughters. My son's 42. You know, kids are like our clock. You know, it's like I said, you know, hey, my son's 36 and dad, I'm not 36, I'm 42. It's like, okay, sorry. You know, I mean, I'm not that good with remembering everybody's birthday. So thank goodness for my wife.
Great. Well, thanks for being on the show. You'd say you've uncovered these things about persuasion and influencing people. And I'd like to talk a little bit about that. Can you tell us a little bit about that, James?
Sure. I ran an advertising agency in Montreal. I'm originally from Montreal, although I've lived in Southern California for 37 years. Our middle daughter, we gave her the initials LA, Lauren Asia, AJA. And that's how I always remember, how long have we been in Southern California? How old's Lauren again? Oh, got it. You know. So, in fact, it's funny because we gave her the name Asia, AJA, from the Steely Dan album, Asia. And 2 years ago, she said to me, Dad, I love the name Asia. Everybody loves it and everything, but why do you name me Asia? It's such a cool name. And I said, because of the Steely Dan album, she said, and there was a song. So she calls me back after about an hour, and she says, I listened to that song. That's horrible. I'm like, I'm sorry. You know, as parents, you know, we give our name a child. And she called me back, you know, later, said, it's kind of growing on me. I'm listening to it, and I see why you like that. I said, well, it's creative. You know, that's why we love you, because we know that, you know, we believe you're going to be a creative child. And she is, which is really great. But
you've got a great name too. You've got James I. Bond.
I mean, yeah, I think my parents had a sense of humor. What can I say? I said, people talk about my book and everything, say, oh, wow, it's really good. And, you know, they look up James Bond, they never find it, you know? So I'm not Sean Connery. Sean Connery, I love.
Got to look up under James I. Bond.
But I had an advertising company. Mm-hmm. I worked my way up, and I finally won major clients like Kraft Foods and Timex and Seagram's, or world headquarters is there, and all that stuff, which is funny. I won Seagram's. I don't drink booze, and I won Seagram's as an account. It's so funny. But I had an opportunity to win the anti-drug campaign in America, and I came up with powerful, logical reasons why you should not do drugs, and I lost. And what did I lose to? I saw this guy. He came up. He says, a guy holding an egg saying, this is your brain. And cracking the shell and dropping the egg into a sizzling frying pan. This is your brain on drugs. Any questions? And it scared me. I recognized immediately this is infinitely more profound than anything I had ever done. But this is emotional selling, not logical selling. And emotional selling, you know, when I was young, I went to Zig Ziglar workshop, and he was phenomenal. And he said, selling is nothing more than a transference of passion. And I realized, you know, it's transference of passion. If you believe something, you take your emotion and you project that emotion. Nobody has to teach you how to sell because, oh, this is so great, blah, blah. You know, X-Ane's workshop or webinar program is so great. You know, podcast is just amazing. You know, I mean, if there's something that you love, it's so hard. You know, nobody has to teach you how to sell. And I realized that I'm trying to sell by logic, and yet if I'm passionate about something, I'm messing it up by making it logical. I also realize they don't teach you emotional selling in school or anywhere, actually, except life. And so I love 3x5 cards. So on the 3x5 card, I wrote your brain on drugs so I'd remember that. And I decided I want every time I see something or hear something, and if I hear somebody say something that's emotionally powerful, I'm going to write it down or maybe tear it out of a magazine and put it in. And I put a box next to my computer. I said, I'm going to call that the passion box. And every time I see or hear something that's passionate, I'm going to put it in the box in the hopes that eventually I'll have enough examples that I'll be able to figure out, like, you know, how, you know, emotion works, emotional selling. Well, 10 years later, we moved to Southern California, and I met John Gray. And John Gray was telling me about this incredible book he wrote called Men, Women, and Relationships. And people would read, he was telling me, people would read the book, and they said, this is the most incredible relationship book I've ever read. It's changing my life. It's changing our lives and everything. He said, but almost nobody was buying the book. And so he got this crazy idea. He said, one day he's sitting there and he goes, what if I change the title to Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus? It actually came in one of the seminars he was doing to try to promote the book, and all the women started laughing, and the men looked at the women going like, what are they laughing at? You know, and he said, see, some things women laugh at and they get and they think it's really funny. Some things us guys laugh at and we think it's really funny. And some things all of us laugh at, but there are differences. And one of the women in the audience says, it's almost like men are from a different planet. What planet do you think men are from? And he goes, maybe men are from Mars. And everybody started laughing. When he got home, he said, okay, if men are from Mars, where are women from? Well, women are from, men are from Mars, women are from Venus. Venus is the god of love. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, nobody's buying my book anyway. What if I change the title to Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, and then just refer to it throughout the book, you know, but still keep the same book? What do you think happened? Almost overnight, 500,000 people bought his book, then 1 million, then 2 million. He sold over 50 million books, one because he changed the title. And so he was telling me this, and I'm like, oh, I mean, I have two copies of, by the way, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, fabulous book.
But I realized exactly the same content in the book.
Yes.
Just a different title, and yes, that made all the difference.
Oh, that's right. And I realized, like, wow. So I came home, I was going to put the book in my passion box. And I stopped, and I said, wait a second, men aren't really from a different planet. I mean, some women probably think we are. I know we act that way sometimes, we are from a different planet. But it's a metaphor, you know, it's just, they're basically saying men are so different than women that it's almost like men are from a different planet like Mars and women are from a different planet like, you know, Venus. So, and it's because it's a metaphor, it connects with us more than if you just said, hey, men are different from women, you know, that's not the same as men are from Mars, women are from Venus. Right. Then I realized, okay, so is metaphors the secret? And then I realized, wait a second, the guy with the egg saying, this is your brain. He was not holding a brain. He was holding an egg. Then he dropped the egg into a sizzling frying pan. That's another metaphor. Is metaphors the secret? When I got into my passion box, I dumped all the examples I have on my bed because I needed a big space because I had a lot of samples. And I suddenly realized that metaphors is one of 14 brain triggers at the heart of emotional selling. And I thought my brain was going to
help you transfer that passion. Like you said, selling is just the transfer of passion, transference of passion.
That's right. Right. That's right. And
metaphors is one of the things that helps you. This is your brain. This is your brain on drugs.
Women, yeah, exactly. But there are things like rhyme. You never think of it. You know, I mean, do you remember O.J. Simpson's trial? If the glove doesn't fit, you have to acquit, you know? And I remember two of the jurors at the end of the trial were asked the question, and one of them answered, well, the other one was nodding her head in agreement. And the person asked them, with all that evidence against OJ, why'd you find him not guilty? And she looked confidently. She said, we knew if the glove don't fit, you must acquit. The glove didn't fit. We had to acquit. You know, it's rhyme. I mean, I would have said, he's an actor. You have to love how he faked the glove. I mean, if I was another attorney, you know, I don't want to get into OJ. I think it was interesting. But I start to understand, like, these are tools that if you say it to people, it sticks in the brain like glue. That's why I call it brain glue, by the way. But I'll give you two examples. So one of my daughters, my youngest daughter, was wondering about her career. And she has experience working in a hospital. She actually did volunteer work in a hospital. And so I was thinking, why don't you try to become a nurse? But if I said, why don't you become a nurse, especially with some of our kids, you know, they'll do the exact opposite. But I thought I'd try brain glue. And I said, if you want a real career, avoid the curse, become a nurse. If you want to have a lot of money, honey, you know, avoid the curse, become a nurse. But she started going, okay. And she started remembering. I remember avoid the curse. And she said, yeah, become a nurse. But she wants to go into technology now, which is kind of cool. But anyway, but it got me thinking. But I want to tell you this changed my life. This was so profound. And let me just tell you this little thing that a lot of people don't know how to do. So brain glue is based on something called redintegration, not reintegration, but redintegration, which is the brain's need for completion. Okay. The brain loves patterns. So if I start telling you a rhyme, you want to end the rhyme. If I say, Jack and Joe went up the hill. You know, our brain immediately goes hill. Okay, we know what's there. But so what's the most powerful tool of human interaction? I'm using it now, aren't I? Can you tell what I'm doing? I'm asking questions, aren't I? Questions are the most powerful tool of human interaction, aren't they? Because it wakes up the brain, because our brain can easily get distracted, or we're thinking of things, or, you know, you're talking to somebody and they're it starts raining and they're looking out the window going, oh, did I forget to close the windows of my car? You know, no, keep telling me what you're telling me. But in their mind, they're thinking of this other thing. You know, am I going through a divorce, or did I have a fight with this thing, or did I, you know? So what you do is you take simple reflexive questions. Isn't it, doesn't it, shouldn't it, don't you agree, are simple reflexive questions, aren't they? And you put them at the end of your sentences, and it changes how you interact with people. And so let me tell you with my daughter, okay? I'm sitting and I'm talking, well, a friend first on my daughter. So I'm talking to a friend and I said, it's really nice weather outside. He comes around and I said, hey man, it's beautiful outside. Normally I would say it's beautiful outside. You want to go throw a football around? But I said, it's really beautiful outside, isn't it? And he goes, yeah. I go, oh no, what's wrong? Oh, nothing, nothing. I said, what? Oh, you know, and he starts telling me he's having a little argument with his wife and he's having trouble. And I got to chat with him about that. In 100 years, I wouldn't have gotten to uncover that that was an issue if I didn't have my simple reflexive question. If I would have said, hey, it's beautiful, let's go toss a football around, we would have done that. But I said, it's beautiful, isn't it, this day? And he said, yeah. So my daughter, my middle daughter, Lauren, my oldest daughter is she's like, you know, really a hard, you can't not interact with her. But our middle daughter is a quiet daughter. And so one day I'm sitting and I said, I'm practicing my simple reflexive questions. I said, hey, Lauren, how's it going? She goes, okay. I go, well, what's wrong? She's, you know, nothing. I said, what? I said, no. She said, I'm going to tell you something, okay? She said, and I hope you don't feel bad about this. I know you run a, you know, behavioral management firm and all that stuff, but you never got to know me. You know, she was 21 years old, by the way, this when this happened. And I said, what? She said, yeah, you're a consultant. And you work with all these people. So whenever I would say something, like a problem that happens, you would stop me right in the middle and tell me, start giving me solutions for it. That's what you do. Instead of just listening. And I said, what? She said, yeah, really? Do I do that? She said, yeah. You don't know what's going on in my life. You don't know me. I never, you know, got to know you. And it's because you're so focused on trying to solve problems, as most guys trying to solve problems, that, you know, you're listening until you hear the problem. Oh, I can fix it. I can solve it. And it's because of simple reflexive questions that my relationship with Lauren has radically improved. I mean, I think I wish it was young when I was younger, but because I experienced this, I started to recognize, like, yeah, it's true. I'm a problem solver. You know, that's the brain glue, helps you solve problems if you want to sell somebody or explain something or whatever else. But the most important relationship we're ever going to have is with our kids, with our wife, if we have it, or husband or whatever else, or somebody who we're close friends with. And when you embed simple reflexive questions into how you speak, isn't it, doesn't it, shouldn't it, don't you agree? If you wire it into how you interact, it radically boosts your ability to interact. Does that make sense?
And it does. In fact, let me share a couple things here with you as well. I understand. I read somewhere, I believe there was some research out of Harvard, if I remember correctly. And the research out of Harvard showed that they watched people who were talking to each other. And they said, they asked these same people who they kind of had them rate the other people, like, how much did you enjoy talking to this person? And they found that the person who was asking the most questions was the one who was liked the most. And the one who was enjoying the conversation the most was the one who was talking the most. Isn't that interesting? So If you want to have a relationship with people, you say, okay, you know, the person who's talking the most, if I want somebody to enjoy being with me, perhaps I need to be curious and ask questions, kind of like you're talking about. There was also some other research, and I can't remember where it came out of, that was showing that, you know, leaders emerge as they listen. And just the fact when people feel like they're heard and they're understood, they then become more open to your suggestion as well. And so I think one of the most powerful things we can do is in any situation, whether it be in business or with our children or with our spouse, is to just be quiet and listen. Now, I admit, I'm the first to admit I'm not very good at this all the time.
Welcome to the club.
In fact, you know, I studied psychology in school. I remember a while ago, I asked a marriage counselor, I said, what do you do to influence people who are having, if their marriage is on the rocks and you're trying to help them? And he said, that's easy. I listen to them. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the biggest persuasive things that we can do when we're trying to influence our children for good or our spouse or people at work or anyone is to be quiet, ask questions, kind of like you're talking. They could be reflexive questions. They could be even other kinds of questions where they really get that we get them. I also liked when you said, isn't it? One of the things I noticed you said is that you were listening not just to his words, but you were listening to nonverbal cues. You could tell that the way he said it was there was something troubling the person you were talking to. Somebody who was saying he had a problem with his marriage. He was kind of trying to get. And so I think that listening cue, sometimes we have to listen more than just what they're saying, but what are they not saying? Because a lot of communication is nonverbal. In fact, you know, they say, in fact, most of our communication is our tone of voice or the way we hold our body or the way we react. You know, am I looking you in the eye or not? Or am I kind of distant because you can tell something's troubling? Or am I looking down or, you know, and being able to ask those. So that's very profound, James, that this ability to ask questions to help persuade and influence people when we ask questions.
Being vulnerable is comfortable, you know, makes people comfortable interacting with us. You know, I ran one of America's leading behavioral management firms for 13 years, and I love saying this. And then, I'm supposed to be this guy that knows how to build relationships and all that stuff. And suddenly I discovered that my own relationship with my middle daughter wasn't that great. You know, and then when people hear that, and I'm saying it honestly, but when people hear that, I'm basically saying, I'm not so smart that you better shut up and listen to me and everything else. I'm saying, hey, I'm human just like you guys or gals, you know, and I think with kids, with our kids, it's important. With our relationships with our spouse or boyfriend or girlfriend, it's important too. It's one of the most common complaints that people have, particularly women, is that, I love him, but he's like so closed. He never shares with me what's really going on with him emotionally. And I think it's one of those things that when we're, you know, our life is easier if we're comfortable sharing vulnerability. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't mean, you know, the biggest leaders in the world, the greatest leaders in the world are not talkers. They're, you know, they're comfortable explaining their vulnerability. You know, I work with, Warren Buffett's team. You know, I work with Saul Price, who founded the Price Club and Costco and all that stuff. You know, and we interact, and they're comfortable in working with me because I tell them, hey, look, you know, I said, I'm, you know, supposed to be this expert in marketing. And when Steve Jobs invented a phone with a camera inside it, I went, who needs a camera on a phone? You should see how many photographs I have on my phone, you know? I said, you know, we think we're so good, but we're never that, you know? You have to be learning. I mean, the best teacher is a student. You know, if you're learning something and you're sharing, it's easier to share it with other people. John Gray, who did Men Are From Mars, Women From Venus, told me, never tell people you're an expert. He says, I'm supposed to be an expert in relationships. I go home and my wife proves me wrong, you know? He says, tell people you're a specialist. Okay, I'm a specialist in human behavior, you know? I think that's what, and it's hard today because so many people are living on their phone. Or, you know, I love Zig Ziglar had this great, great line. He said, so we live in texts, right? We are emailing each other, texting each other. So he said, I did not say he beat his wife. Listen to how many different ways. I sent that you in a text, okay? But how did you relate to it? I didn't say he beat his wife. Somebody might have said it, but it wasn't me. I didn't say he beat his wife. I might have implied it, but I didn't actually say it. I didn't say he beat his wife. And am I talking about tennis? How many different ways can you take these words? You know, think about this. How many times do you suddenly have somebody who's a friend or whatever else, and suddenly they're pissed off at you? And you don't even know why they're pissed off at you, but it could be because you sent them an email and they misunderstood the email. what the words were. We live with text, and text is like the worst thing because there's so many different ways to interpret certain things. I dealt with one of my brothers. He got pissed off at me, and I was like, "Why? I don't understand." He said, "No, it's just the way you are." Eventually, I discovered it was an email I sent that he misunderstood. That's why I put happy faces and all that stuff.
Crazy. Yeah, and sometimes that helps. I've heard that I've heard it said that 93% of what you're saying, you're not saying with your actual words. You're saying it with, and I don't know, remember the study. I apologize, but you're not saying it with your actual words. You're saying it with other things, your body language. I also read somewhere that there was a study done where people were trying to solve relationship problems via a text message. And my understanding is that they failed miserably. In other words, because you can't hear their real, am I saying it enthusiastically? Am I saying it with emphasis on a different word? And so when you are listening, I like how you share, again, that back to the story you said where you shared, where you could just tell something in his tone of voice, something in his body language, you could sense that something was troubling. And when you said the question, then it reflects a question with, isn't it? Do you want to go? I can't remember the question you asked, actually.
There's another thing that's important also, and it's a brain glue thing, but it's very important, and it's humor. You know, humor actually triggers oxytocin that it actually helps you cure for illness. But if you're talking to somebody, so I was talking to these three women.
Is that one of the 14 points, like metaphor, rhyme, and humor? Okay, great.
Yeah. And so I'm talking to these three women who are very religious. So I needed a religion. So if you start with a joke, that's a good way to make people much more comfortable listening to what you're saying. Okay. And I wanted to talk about something. It was kind of complicated. So I started with a joke. I said, so a little girl comes up to her mommy and says, "Mommy, daddy says we came from apes, but you say we came from Adam and Eve. Honey, daddy's talking about his family. I'm talking about my family." And so these women, they started laughing, and then they're more comfortable listening to me from that point forward because I'm telling jokes, it's serious what I was talking about. I said, "It's serious, but not as serious as little girl coming up to you," and they're all laughing. I did a turnaround of a company of martial arts equipment company. Okay. And it was in trouble, and we had fabulous success. So it was great. But when I started, when people are going through a turnaround is basically where they're in trouble and maybe almost going bankrupt and everybody's going to lose their jobs. There's fear. People were afraid, and fear shuts down creativity. Fear, it just stops our creativity. So I started with a joke, and I said, serviceman is hiding in a closet. Every time somebody comes up to the closet, he opens up the door and screams, "Supplies!" Okay, not surprise, supplies. And so people started laughing, which is good. And then I got him working. It was about a year that I was working with this company. I remember I would look inside the window of, because the offices had windows of this woman. It happened several times, but this woman is a good example. And I could see she's talking to somebody on the phone and there's stress on her face, and she hangs up. And so I open up the door to ask her, "How's it going?" And she looks up at me and she goes, "Oh, supplies." She remembers the joke. And you could see her body language change. She went from stress to smiling and supplies. "Hey, here's the supplies guy." But it's amazing when you start learning these, these psychological tools and start using it, it makes life easier. Now I'm always telling jokes. I'm not very good at it, so practice doesn't make perfect for me. But it's just, when you learn these tools and you start interacting with people in these tools, it just changes your life. And I remember this guy. Okay, I always remember this.
And by the way, this is so valuable for a parent to say, "Okay, look, maybe I can use some humor when I'm trying to teach my children."
Absolutely.
At work, or use metaphors, like you were talking with the egg. Yeah. And we would love to hear some more of these 14, but continue on.
But so, I forget what I was going to say. I was talking about, I'll think about it. I'll think of it in a second.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, don't worry about it. It's fine. I'm getting old. What can I say? But when you start to learn some of these tools, When you start to learn some of these tools, it becomes easier. I remember what it is. So I saw this guy and he had a t-shirt, and the t-shirt said, "Life sucks and then you die." And I'm like, no, we're alive right now. No, life sucks and then you die. That's the wrong life you're living. You know, you got to enjoy life every day. You've got to, you know, I mean, I started as a shy person. I took, you know, Dale Carnegie, public speaking, and then Toastmasters and all that stuff. So I became comfortable with, in fact, my wife said, they taught him how to talk. They just didn't teach him how to shut up. So sorry, Pam. But it takes practice. And so like when I bump into people in, in a store, or I'm just standing at a checkout counter, I talk to a person, "Oh, your name's Mary. Hey, cool. Hi, Mary. I'm James," you know? And it's just, you can tell that they're not used to talking with everybody who goes through the thing, you know, who's going through the checkout counter. But when we go through this and we practice these things, it helps a lot. You know, I mean, my kids say, "Oh, my dad's going to tell a joke again. Here we go," you know, but they're still, they've got a smile on their face, even though they're kidding me. You know, I'm lucky. My name's James Bond. So, you know, sometimes they say, "Dad," you know, we go to a restaurant and they say, "Dad, can I have your driver's license for a second?" I said, "Why?" He said, "Well, because they don't believe it's James Bond. I got to show him your license." Okay, fine. You know, and I think James part of why Bond. I got into Brango is because of, you know, in the beginning, I was born after the books, before the movies. And so eventually, you know, I'd say James Bond and everyone would go, "James Bond, what?" You know, but I realized that. So my wife and I were walking, we're just going for a walk, and we're walking around this church, and there's a guy and a woman in there and their dog. The dog came out there, and he said, "Hi, I'm Joe and this is Mary." "Oh, okay, great." "And I'm James and this is Pam." "Oh, okay, great." So then I stopped for a second. I said, "Actually, my name is James Bond." And they started laughing. Next time I walk around the place, is he going to remember my name? Yes. Because it's James Bond, and there's something about it that triggers the brain. It goes, "Ooh, got that." You know, it's like a photograph, you know, we photographed that. And so I realized that there are certain things that we say. I mean, Warren Buffett, I love Warren Buffett, especially because I work with him, but his team. But Warren Buffett said, "Only when the tide goes out do you discover who's been swimming naked." What he's basically saying is only when times get tough do you realize who's competent and who's capable. But if you say that, it goes in one ear and out the other. But he uses a trigger word, because naked is a trigger word. He goes, "Only when the tide goes out do you discover who's been swimming naked." And when you hear that, it goes...
Also, using a metaphor, too, almost, right?
That's right, exactly. It's a visual.
Comparing business to being on the beach with the tide going in.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. I say, like with brain glue, it's like having a naked man running through your backyard. It grabs your attention. People go, sorry.
Is a trigger word is something that makes brain glue. Is that what you're saying? Is that one of
Exactly. So
I think list through quickly. Could you list through quickly, James, the 14 things just for people?
Sure.
We've got a marketing genius on the show.
I just want to give you a trigger words for a second, because I thought of the word dirty. Okay. So if you had something, would you call it dirty? And yet movies that are blockbusters are Dirty Dancing, Dirty Harry movies, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. So during my dirty week, where I was, you know, going through like one of the brain glue tools, I sent emails to publishers, to writers at the major magazines. And I sent them to like 22 of them, and two of them, and, you know, they get overwhelmed with people saying, "Hey, write an article in my book," or whatever else. But two of them responded immediately because of the email I sent. And I said, "The dirty truth about an article you wrote" was the headline. And then I said, you know, "I just want to talk about brain glue." And so they said, "Okay, yes, you got me. Send me a copy of your book." But it's just, you know, so when you understand trigger words, it just really helps. So how would you like to, there's a kid who came up with one word, and the one word was so powerful, it helped him become a billionaire with one word. What could that word be? So what do Richard Branson, Madonna, and olive oil have in common? The word virgin, virgin olive oil, like a virgin, touched for the very first time, blah, blah, blah. That was her blockbuster song. And then Richard Branson came up with the word, he dropped out of high school. He never actually finished high school. He borrowed money from his dad so he could start a magazine. And he started a magazine to help musicians. And eventually he decided he wanted to start a record company. And he was thinking with his buddy, with his partner, one of his friends, and they came up with the idea of Virgin Records. They said, that would be a cool name. Everybody's going to go, Virgin Records? Whoa, okay, what's that? He eventually got the Rolling Stones and other people. And then eventually he got Virgin Hotels. He started Virgin Airlines, Virgin Galactic, and all that stuff. And he started trademarking all these Virgin names and building all these businesses because of the word Virgin. So here I'll give them really fast, okay, because there are 14 of them. The first one is set the right expectation, okay? Let people know what's going to happen. Hey, I'm going to laugh. I think you're going to laugh at this, but da, da, da. Or I think you might not like this, but give me just a couple of minutes to explain this. And I think once you understand what I'm saying, I think it'll resonate with you and you'll understand what it is. So set expectation. A tribal alignment. If some, you know, we see it with certainly with the presidency and all that stuff, you know, people hate one person or love another or whatever else, you know, understand the tribes that people are involved with. You're in Utah or so. So I know I have a lot of friends who are Mormons. Okay. And so I can relate. And so we talk about that. But if I say, you know, if you don't like them, then it's, you know, the more you understand about what a tribe person's in, you know, tribe could be, I'm from the military. Okay. My son was in a Navy. So I was giving him examples of people that could help him in business if he wanted some help. And he said, there's this guy, and this guy who's actually was in a Navy. Oh, let me talk to that guy, you know? So when we understand tribal alignment, that helps. Ease their understanding. If I said there were 2.5 million plastic bottles are thrown in the trash every day, you know, well, that sounds like a lot, right? What if I told you that's enough to reach the moon every 3 weeks? Whoa, you know, we have to understand that a lot of things that we say to people, you know, we think they understand, but they don't understand. And you have to, you know, do a metaphor or, you know, there are other ways that you can do this, explain it in such a way that people go, oh, that's interesting. Okay, you know, I mean, we had my business. So when we're working with large organizations, we have these powerful tools that we use, but we would explain it and people, you know, because the psychological tools, people, you could see their eyes like glazing over. But then I realized it's kind of like a personal trainer. You know, a personal trainer shows up at your house and gets you to do more push-ups than you could do on your own, right? You know, come on, you know, two more, one more, you got it, you know, they get us to do more push-ups than you could do on your own. We get your senior people to tackle bigger projects than they could do on their own because we use psychological tools that make it easier for them to tackle bigger projects. And by using that, you know, that metaphor, that analogy, that it's just like a personal trainer showing up, getting you to do more push-ups than you could do on your own, it made it easier for them to understand. So you want to ease their understanding. Then we have metaphors and analogies.
Right. Metaphor. Yeah, this is very interesting. Metaphors and analogies. Okay.
Then we have anchoring. Anchoring is really powerful. It's where you take something that already exists, like head and shoulders, knees and toes, eyes, ears, mouth and nose. We all remember that, or a lot of us remember that. So if you're going to come up with a dandruff shampoo, why don't we call it head and shoulders? Duh. Became successful. Okay. There's Bobby Flay, who started he's a chef. And so he's going to do grilling. And so what sounds like grill sounds like girl, boy meets girl. Why don't we call it boy meets grill? It's already in their mind, okay? Ronald Reagan, when he was president of the United States, it was at a time after the Vietnam War, and people hated war and anything you were going to talk about war. Well, they were developing a missile defense system, and he wanted to finance it. And if he would have said, we're going to develop, we were taking some of our government money and we're going to develop a missile defense system, people would have fought it. But he anchored it with something that people loved. And that was at the time when the movie Star Wars just came out and people were like floored by, oh, this is the greatest movie ever. So what did he call it? He said, so we're launching this new project and we're calling it the Star Wars Missile Defense System. And people went, whoa, that's really cool. The Star Wars, we're going to have these spaceships flying over, you know, shooting out missiles from space, you know. And it's just,
and that's an example of anchoring, is that correct?
Anchoring, that's right. You anchor, you take something that already exists and either stick it to something else or, you know, or just twist it slightly, like Boy Meets Grill. Okay. Your tone of voice. A lot of people don't know that Margaret Thatcher, she was phenomenal in England, but her party didn't like her. They loved what she said, but didn't like how she talked. She talked really, blah, blah, blah. And she realized that she had to go to a voice coach who slowed and lowered her voice, how she talked. And suddenly, it's because the voice coach changed how she spoke. They made her the head of her party, and then she became the Prime Minister of England, okay? Because of the tone of voice. So the tone of voice is very important. I learned this because I came from a family, they wouldn't let me talk, which is probably why I'm a good listener. they'd always interrupt me and shut me down and everything else. And so when I talked in the beginning, I would talk really fast because I would try to talk fast before somebody shut me down, before one of us, my brother or my mom or my dad shut me down. But that's the worst way to interact with people, is by talking fast. And so I had to learn how to change so I can be comfortable. And if they're going to stop and interrupt me, let me shut up and do that. It took a lot of work for me to do that, but changing your tone of voice and how you speak is very important. Triggering oxytocin is the next one. That's humor. When we have cortisol, which is if we're scared or mad, cortisol gets, the brain triggers cortisol to go through your bloodstream. And cortisol stays in your bloodstream for up to 36 hours. So if you're pissed off or scared because of something that happened yesterday, and I'm trying to sell you something or trying to persuade you of something, it's very unlikely that I'll be successful today because you still got cortisol in your bloodstream. Unless I told you a joke. If I told you a joke, it actually waters down cortisol.
Oh, interesting. So what we're trying to do is avoid fear and something that caught a stress triggering cortisol reaction and have more of an oxytocin reaction, which is triggered a lot by humor.
Exactly. And it makes, I trained.
And this is great for parents, by the way, right? Yep. Instead of saying, okay, you better do well since I'm going to and do something that causes cortisol, maybe using a little humor could keep it so that your influence with your children or others or anyone goes up. I love this. Thanks for sharing these.
And I had because I ran a behavioral management firm, we had psychologists, and I forced them, I trained them and forced them that they had to start a session, if they're doing a session with people, with a joke or something interesting. Like, hey, look at this. Oh, wow, that's cool. Okay. And it took a while to do this, but they recognize that, wow, people are much more receptive to what we're talking about if we start with humor. hey, go figure. Next is rhyme, as we know that. If the glove doesn't fit, you have to acquit, Squatty Potty, how's that for a product? Okay, yes. I use that as an example. That's really great. But anyway, there's a whole example there. Alliteration, the repetition of sound. When I started to recognize the power of alliteration, Coca-Cola, Best Buy, PayPal, TikTok, Lululemon, TikTok, if they call themselves the Chinese social media platform, you think they'd be as successful as TikTok? You think it's a coincidence that all these monsters of success, many that started with almost no money, use alliteration? Yeah, no, there's something about alliteration that sticks to the brain like glue. Then there's chiasmus. Chiasmus is really awesome. Chiasmus is, it's a flip. So rhyme is, I say this and it rhymes. I don't know what, switch your pitch if you want to get rich. That's one of the things I do, okay? Brain glue shows you teaches you how to light the fire of desire in your buyer. Okay, it's rhyme. Okay, well, chiasmus is a flip. All for one and one for all. When the going gets tough, the tough get going. Okay, Malcolm X said, "We didn't land on Plymouth Rock; the rock landed on us." He said also, "When you stand for nothing, you'll fall for anything." Say that to your kids, I say that, I use that all the time. I say, hey, guys, if you stand for nothing, you'll fall for anything. They go, it gets you thinking, but it's a flip, okay?
Okay, that's
amazing. Then there's trigger words. You went through it. Dirty, the good, the bad, and the ugly. The ugly, Ugly Betty, the TV show, was successful. There are certain trigger words. Virgin Airlines, there's this woman, I forget her name, but she started the Vagina Monologues, Eve Ensler. Okay. She created a play that was off Broadway that became massively successful, talking about women and what they have to go through and some of the hard times they have to go through and everything else. If she called it Women's Hard Times, you think it would be as successful as Vagina Monologues? I mean, who names her and play that? And yet it sticks to the brain. It's like, whoa, you know? There's odd mental surprises, you know, things going together that normally don't go together. You put two things together, that don't go together. And you just get floored, like Snoop Dogg and Martha Stewart. You know, it's like, what? Those two are partners? You know, it's so funny because now Snoop Dogg was on the cover of the Woman's Home Journal or one of the magazines he would never be on. And she's supporting this drug company. So anyway, rejection attracts. You know, you tell somebody they can't have something and they often will want it. Then the last one is sense elevation. And sense elevation is really powerful. It's so how would you like somebody to steal your idea and make a fortune while you starve to death? Wouldn't that be fun? No. So Post Cereals decided they wanted to come up with a product that's totally different from cereals that so they can compete with Kellogg's even more successfully. And so the head of Post Cereals came up with this, it's like this rectangular little cake that has jelly in it, like strawberry, blueberry, raspberry that you put in the toaster. And when it comes out of the toaster, you have this nice warm cake that you can eat as breakfast or lunch, whatever else, or as a snack. He decided to call it Country Squares. 3 months before he launched it, he promoted it to the media saying, hey, we got this new product coming out called Country Squares. Isn't this great? Blah, 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 blah. And he showed it and people went like, wow. Well, of course, the head of Kellogg saw it and went, that's incredible. Hey, guys, all the people in the company, I need you to figure out how to make that product, okay? They made the product and they said, we have to come up with a better name. So what are we going to call it? Well, it pops out of the toaster. That's sense elevation. Pop. Pops out of the toaster. Why don't we call it Pop? And back then, Andy Warhol was really famous as a pop artist. So that's anchoring. Pop art, Pop Tart. He decided to call it Pop Tarts. Of course, he launched it 1 week before Country Squares, okay? Because he knew when they were launching it, they already said, idiots. And Pop Tarts exploded. People bought Pop Tarts like crazy, so much so that they ran out of product. They suddenly had it everywhere. He actually ran ads apologizing and said, just hold on for a few days and we're going to have Pop-Tarts available in stores very soon. Nobody bought Country Squares. They waited for Pop-Tarts to become available. Pop-Tarts last year sold 3 billion units. And yet within 6 months of launching Pop-Tarts and Post stopped selling Country Squares because nobody was buying it. Because Pop-Tarts, you know, the name resonated so much it sticks to the brain of people. And Pop-Tarts, oh, cool, Country Squares, I don't know what that's all about. Pop-Tarts, yeah, that's cool. And it's just stuck to the brain. It's because of sense elevation. There's like, smells like teen spirit. What a name for a song. That smells like teen spirit. Ooh, what does that smell like? Fabulous song. I love that song. But I mean, but he uses senses that we don't normally use, you know. Blue Emu is this cream that you put on your joints in case when you start feeling pain in your joints. A lot of athletes use it and stuff like that. And I remember hearing, I was not even listening. I was on a computer. I have a TV next to my computer. Normally I don't have it on, but I had it on and it had Johnny Bench, famous baseball player, talking about it. And I could care less until he says, Blue Emu, it works fast and you won't stink. What did he just say? And from that point forward, I was listening because a trigger word, stink, but also it's sense elevation, you know? And so, yeah, so those are the 14 brain triggers. And they're just, it's full. When people start, they go through this, I give examples, including jokes. people start laughing like crazy, but then you go through it and there's a simple exercise and you go through this exercise and suddenly people go like, whoa, and they start coming back to me, including people that are making a fortune off products that they were struggling with people also tell me, I try this on my son or my daughter and this is really great. And it's fun.
That's genius. And also, this could help anybody in business try to be more influential. It could help parents try to be influential.
So there's a mom and son, and I talked about the end of the story, but there's a mom and son who watch Shark Tank. A lot of people watch Shark Tank and get inspired. And they said, like, wow, it would be really great if we could you know, create a product and get on Shark Tank. We'll be millionaires and we'll have lots of fun. And so, you know, it takes a while. You know, usually you don't get an idea. You know, you say, I want to create a product, but you don't say, oh, what it is. It takes a while to come up with the product. So there, it took about a month. And the mom was constipated. She had a constipation problem. And the doctor told her, if you raise your feet, you know, when you're on the toilet, when you raise your feet 6 to 8 inches off the toilet, it changes the shape of your body and it's much easier going to the bathroom, especially if you're constipated a lot. And she tried it and it worked really well. And they went, wow, well, that's great. Maybe that should be the product we sell. We'll wrap it around a toilet. So, you know, you don't have to, you sit on a toilet, you're fine. But if you want to use it, you just slide it out and you put your feet on it and your feet are up there. Wow, that's great. So what do we want to call it? Well, it's a toilet stool. My wife says they should have called it the stool, but I don't think that's really a good name. But the toilet stool, okay. And she went like, I don't like the name toilet. I don't think that's a nice name to call it. So what is it? It's potty is another word for toilet, potty. And I'm squatting, squatty potty. And they came up with the name squatty potty. Became massively successful. They sold more than that. They made more than $100 million. These are a mom and son with no business experience, and they made over $100 million. I mean, they found a supplier to make it for them. They call it Squatty Potty, became massively successful. They got on Shark Tank, and almost all the sharks wanted to invest in them because the name resonated. They knew it sold, but also the name resonated, you know? And that's why, like, when people, you know, you apply these things, and suddenly it just... It triggers the brain in such a way that people go, eh. And that's what you want. Is you want to, you know, if you're selling a product, if you're selling an idea, if you're selling a podcast, whatever else it is, you want to, you know, I'm selling a book, but you want people to go, huh, what's that? You know, huh, that's interesting. You know, men are from Mars, women are from Venus. That's odd. What's that? You know, they'll pick up the book and they'll look at it. I have this woman who has more than 5 million fans on Facebook. And guess how much money she spent in marketing? Zero. So she's a stay-at-home mom and she wanted to create a Facebook page. And she said, well, I could, you know, make it a stay-at-home. I'm a stay-at-home mom, so it should be mom things. So let's see, mommy needs time to herself. Mommy needs a rest from all these kids. Well, I know what mommy needs. Mommy needs vodka. So she created a Facebook page called Mommy Needs Vodka. I mean, I'm not a drinker, but what can I say? But I remember odd mental
connections, possibly.
That's exactly it. It's like something you don't connect. It's like, Mommy Needs Vodka? What's that? I remember seeing a post of hers, and it was a pretty good post. A lot of people have good posts on their Facebook page, but they don't have 5 million fans. But so I saw one of her posts that one of my friends must have sent it to me or something on Facebook. I went, oh, that's pretty funny. It's by Mommy Needs Vodka. What the heck's that? Clicked on the link. Went to her page, loved the post she has, became a fan, just like probably everybody else. But it's just, you know, that's what we want to do. We want to recognize, we want to wake up the brain. If we're talking to our kids, we want to wake up the brain, don't we? You know, but we want to do it in a way that's fun. And we, you know, the more fun we can have, I mean, again, if times are hard, we have to get them that t-shirt that says life sucks and then you die. No. This is life right now. This is today is a great day. You know, tomorrow might be terrible. I'm going into operations hospital. I have to get heart bypass surgery. I'm so excited. Oh, yippee. You know, but it's just, you know, I'll take it one day at a time, you know, and it's just, you have to understand that it's a great blessing that we have, that life is awesome. If we think of it that way, if we think, you know, if we focus on the negative all the time, then you're going to see what you look for. You look for, you know, so I tell you, this guy's an idiot. He might sound really good, but you just keep listening to him, you're going to realize he's an idiot. You know, you're going to listen and he's going to talk and say some really fabulous things. And he says one thing that's stupid. You go, I knew it. Okay. Because the expectation is set. If I tell you this guy's a genius, he's going to say stuff and you're probably even not even going to believe him. But just keep listening to him because the guy's a genius. You won't believe it. He works with Warren Buffett. He works with that. Okay. You know, then you're going to go, okay. And now you've got the expectation set and you're going to listen. And that's why, you know, when we, you know, talk to the kids, I'll talk to my kids and I'll say, you guys aren't going to like what I'm about to say. Okay. So I want to start there, but I'm saying this because I really love you guys and I want you to understand this. And then, and if you don't like it, you can, you know, throw your curves at me and everything else, but, you know, but let me at least try this. And by using these tools, like setting expectation in advance, it becomes easier to interact with people in a way that we want, you know. That's why I think the most important thing we do when we send texts is having the emojis. you know?
Because at least we can get a little bit of the emotion that you can't get with the other place, right?
Yeah, correct.
This has been awesome, James. Seriously, it's an honor to have you. You're one of America's leading marketing and behavioral management specialists. We'll call you. We could call you an expert, but you've asked.
Don't call me an expert. Right?
Warren Buffett's teams used you, and you know, having done some of the things you've done here about how to make things stick, whether you're in business and you're, you know, a parent trying to make your business rock star, what a great resource. Where can people find you, James?
I'm hiding. Well, jbond@fasterbuyer.com is my email. So if anybody wants to do that, send. But the book,
they gotta give it one more time.
Jbond, like James Bond, JBOND @fasterbuyer.com. That's an easy way to do this. The book Brain Glue, you know, just check out, even if you don't buy it, hopefully you do, but you know, you can go to Amazon, or you know, it's in bookstores also, but you can just look up Brain Glue and you'll see it. And it gives you example chapters so you can look through some of it and just see a shopping list of the different Brain Glue triggers, which is really good. We have a video program, but it's also, it helps you if you do yesbrainglue.com. If you go to yesbrainglue.com, it actually gives a lot of stuff from Brain Glue and has some videos that I think might be interesting as well. So yeah, yesbrainglue.com is an easy way to do that.
Wonderful.
But I want to, if you go through this, share this. That's one of the things that, and that's why I love the fact that I did the book and everything else. But I love the fact that people share this, because they go through the elements of this and they go, oh, wow. And not only do they apply it, but they actually start sharing it. I share it with my kids. They're all the time. They have lots of fun. But you know, it's, you know, when we hear something that's really powerful, that, I mean, this is stuff that sticks to the brain. And it's, we don't realize it, but once you start going through this, you go like, oh, that makes sense. That's why that's, oh, okay, you know. And I go back to, you know, Jack and Jill went up the, you know, I could be on my deathbed and somebody could say, hey, Jack and Jill went up the, and I go, hail the vegetable of water. I mean, it's stuck in my brain. You can't get it unstuck. You know, there are certain, you know, I forget people's names sometimes, or you forget, you know, things like that. Especially as we get older, we tend to forget names more. We remember concepts better.
And these are great tools you can use for anybody building a business, or if you just want to have some stuff stick in your kid's head as a parent. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you said, use a metaphor, use some humor.
Exactly.
You know, use something with alliteration. Some of the things you've talked about, you know, set their expectations. Some great tips.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Yeah. Well, it's fun. But again, the biggest thing is that when you start to recognize it's all over the place. But that's why, you know, we have things that are important for us to say. I'll go back to Malcolm X or President John F. Kennedy. It's funny how many people I say this now. I'm old enough to remember him saying this, but people know this. Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. You know, we remember it.
Chiasmus, right?
Chiasmus, that's exactly right, you know. And so, you know, they're just, I always say, so here's a chiasmus one, okay?
Make some chiasmus sayings in your own family so your kids can remember things. See if you can come up with some good metaphors, some good chiasmus, some good humor.
So I got one. It's, I'd rather wake up and pee than pee and wake up.
There you go. There you go. On that note, is there anything else you would, if you could say one thing to our audience, is there anything else you would let our audience know?
Yeah, two things. First is, isn't it, doesn't it, shouldn't it, don't you agree? Pick somebody in your family. Pick a spouse, a boyfriend, girlfriend, a child, whatever else it is, and talk for 10 minutes just asking questions. And does that make sense? Okay, try that. Because what happens is it starts wiring it into you that you start becoming much more interactive. And so to me, that's one of the greatest things. And another one is, just pick two, but that's the one, isn't it, doesn't it, shouldn't it, don't you agree? It's simple reflexive questions. And the second one is metaphors. You know, it is just like, okay? So whatever your product or service is or your idea is, it's just like, you know, my book is just like a naked man running through your backyard. You know, I'd pick that one, but... But, you know, just it grabs your attention. So, just complete that phrase. My idea is just like, you know, you love going to Disneyland, don't you? Well, going to grandma's house is just like going to Disneyland. Okay, you know, just it's just like, and then pick the craziest idea you can and have fun with it. And you'll be amazed. I think you'll be amazed. I'm amazed. And people are amazed by how often people, it resonates with people. So yeah. Very and check out Brain Glue. I think you'll enjoy it.
Check out Brain Glue. We'll put links to your book and also to your website there. Anyone who wants to reach out to James Ibond. James, thank you so much for being a guest today.
Really, thank you for having me. Love your podcast. And I think, you know, it's so important for families and for everybody. I mean, I think it's just, you rock.
Honored to have you on the show today. Thanks again, James, for being here with us today and sharing your nuggets of profound wisdom with us. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Principal Podcast today. Sign up for my newsletter that's specifically geared towards helping salespeople, negotiators, and business people of all kinds. Anyone who needs to influence people, be awesome at influence others. You can get this newsletter at xfactoredge.com/subscribe. Again, that's xfactoredge.com/subscribe. This newsletter will give you tips on how to explode your sales, be a great negotiator, and attract people to want to work with you. The link is in the show notes. Thanks again for listening.